Before we start the show, I'd like to talk to you about Brandwatch, which is a digital consumer intelligence company. It helps businesses better understand their consumers and buyers with clever software that enables them to analyze conversations from across the web and social media. To find out more, visit brandwatch.com and you can sign up for up-to-the-minute consumer insights in your inbox each week at brandwatch.com/bulletin. And it's worth mentioning that my business, Automated Creative, uses Brandwatch every single day, and our business would be impossible to deliver without it. So it's of real pride that I welcome them as partners for this week's episode. Hello, and welcome to the Shiny New Object podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, and this is a weekly podcast where I interview one of our industry's leaders, and this week is no different. I'm on a call with Katie Puccio-Williams, who is Senior Community Manager, D2C Division at Constellation Brands. Katie, for anyone listening to this podcast who doesn't know who you are and what you do, could you give them an overview?
Absolutely. Hello, everybody. My name is Katie Puccio-Williams. My pronouns are she and her. I'm the Senior Community Manager for the DTC division at Constellation Brands, which is a large kind of beverage and alcohol manufacturing distribution and importing company. I am based in Brooklyn, New York, and I have spent the last almost 7 years in kind of the digital marketing, social media world.
So what advice would you give to a smart driven student who wanted to follow in your footsteps?
So when I first started my career, I worked for a small kind of global digital production shop, Stink Studios, which a sister company of Stink Films, which some folks who listen to this may recognize. So when I started at Stink Studios, I had the fortune of working with a woman who was based out of our LA office. She was the managing director of the Los Angeles office. And she gave me this wonderful advice that I kind of have taken with me since, and I try to pass on as much as possible, which is if you want to be successful in our industry and you want to have longevity in our industry, then you need to make sure that you are comfortable setting boundaries for yourself to kind of protect your heart and to protect your own mental health to make sure that you don't burn out. I think marketing is an always on kind of industry. Because things are always changing and there's always things to react to. And so learning how to set boundaries for yourself is the most important way to make sure that you have longevity to keep doing this work and that you set yourself up to like work sustainably so that you're protecting your mental health and your ability to be creative and be nimble and be flexible. So the first step of that is finding a place to work with a client base that's going to be in line with your own interests and priorities. If you're stuck working, say your heart is in like creative production, you really are into like websites and cutting edge, and you're into Web3 and the metaverse, like maybe traditional CPG companies are not going to be interesting for you. Or if you love fashion, like fintech is not going to feel interesting for you. And by not kind of setting yourself up for success and finding a boundary that works for you, you're going to burn out faster and you're not going to love the work you're doing anymore.
So that's interesting that a boundary for you is about the work as opposed to the amount of work or the type of work. Is that what you mean by boundaries? It's like I'll never work a weekend, or you know, I refuse to work on automotive brands or something like that. Help me understand that a bit better.
Yeah, I think that is important too. But I think those boundaries are things that like everybody can tell you about, right? And I think conversations around how we work and how we allow ourselves to work are changing very quickly. So I think the pandemic exacerbated that in a lot of ways in terms of like making sure you limit your screen time, or, you know, your off hours are really your off hours. You'll see even more companies offering unlimited PTO and benefits like that. So I think those are conversations that are happening at such a high level and from so many different people that that's not advice that I would feel to reiterate. But I think something that's been important to me in my career is setting work boundaries. So like, I would not be able to do my best work if I worked for a pharma company, because I'm not interested in that industry. I don't agree with some of the things that happen there. And like, I just wouldn't be able to be an unbiased source, and I wouldn't be able to do my best work. But like, I work in beverage alcohol, which is a category I love and care so much about, and I'm truly passionate about. And that allows me to then prioritize personal boundaries, because I don't have to be bogged down by like feeling like work is a sludge every day that I'm kind of getting through.
So that's a great bit of career advice, but I'm looking for a marketing tip now. Do you have any kind of golden nuggets of advice that you find yourself sharing on a regular basis?
Yes. So a lot of times I have found myself in kind of like a hybrid strategist copywriter role. That tends to be the kind of like niche that I fall into, just the way my brain works. And the best piece of advice I can give is that you are hired for being yourself and for what you bring to the table. And it's okay to put yourself into your work. You should be able to vary your tone and your creative output in terms of style and aesthetic based on a brief or based on client needs or based on, you know, company policy and everything like that. But you should be able to put yourself into your work and play to your strengths whenever possible. It'll make the work more interesting. It'll allow you to find more nuance, and it'll just be more fulfilling.
Can you give me an example of when you've done that?
Absolutely. So a lot of what I do is kind of like direct level community management. So engaging with consumers on own social media channels, going into, you know, social media networks and engaging with people in the comment section, all of that kind of like boots on the ground social media work. And now that I'm working kind of like in the wine category, which is I have my level 2 WSET certification. I know a lot about wine. I really kind of care about that space. I actually don't have a preset of pre-approved responses for when I respond to consumers when they ask me questions about wine. I take that as an opportunity to kind of bring my own storytelling experience and my own kind of knowledge. And I put that into play when responding to consumers. It allows you to be more relatable and more interesting, and you can personalize a lot better if you're not using canned responses and you're really putting your own thoughts into the work.
Yeah, that's lovely advice, but also the most hard work, right? We're wired to find the workaround. And, I'm just going to come and paste this thing over here. So that's wonderful to hear about the level of craft that goes into your work. This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Madfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. So we're at the halfway stage now. So we're going to talk about your shiny new object, which has like the coolest title, which is How TikTok Saved Brand Voice. So what do you mean? And let's get into that.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to kind of take us through almost like the last 10 years of social media, brand social media. And I'm going to throw influencers in here too, because I think the way they use a personal brand is very similar to how corporations think about brand on social media, and really how that got started, how that changed, and like really where we are now. And what I I want to focus on kind of at the end is the role that TikTok plays in our like modern social media ecosystem. And I love social media. I've been doing social media for my entire career. I'm extremely online as an active user in my downtime. And so this is something I've kind of like been silently observing and putting into practice in my own work for a long time. But it was interesting thinking about this to like actually put it into words and kind of codify the thoughts that have been rattling around in my head for the last couple of years. So I want to go back a little bit to the kind of like golden era of brand and influencer social media. So to me, that's probably like 2012 to 2016. So tweets were winning lions at Cannes. Influencers had like massive sways with consumers, people who had transitioned from being bloggers into these massive platforms with the rise of Instagram. And things like hashtags were still a very effective way to reach new audiences because these platforms were new. They hadn't figured out how to kind of optimize in terms of their own marketing efforts to bring in more ad dollars. And just like that was the golden age of organic social media where people could take off and build these huge audiences for a relatively little amount of work compared to what it's like now with Facebook's kind of like pay to play model. And I also think what was happening at the same time is like we were at a very interesting point in like social culture, right? At least in the US, like we thought we were heading towards the first female president. The internet was generally a happy, interesting place. There was a whole boom in like this new kind of like sitcom comedy era of TV. Like there were all these shows and all these things that were happening that just, there was a certain levity to it. And there was also a rise of all these new platforms for reaching people. So like Instagram exploded. You saw the shift of like, from like photo sharing to I'm going to use all these filters. So suddenly we have curated feeds. We have people who are building aesthetics. We're using it to drive work and to kind of show creative prowess. But this is also the time that Vine started to blow up and we start to see vertical video for the first time, really capturing that kind of like attention economy. And you kind of see that social media begins to become a vital business function for corporations. And we moved beyond that, like, oh, this is your intern tweeting for the brand. Like, no, this is like a major part of a brand's marketing spend. And it was a major way to reach consumers and be the kind of front line between your audience and the brand you were building. So then we get to 2016 and like around the world, everything kind of changed. And it really continued to change until we get to like 2020 with the pandemic. I think after what happened with the US election, what happened with Brexit, Austria elected a far right leader, so did Brazil. Like the world just felt, scary. And there was a lot of social unrest and the kind of 24-hour news cycle, especially on social, became really intense and it brought all of these things to the foreground that we'd kind of just been skirting over. And there was like a very significant tone change that came with that. And given the kind of constant deluge of bad news after scary situation, like people's relationship with the internet and with social media began to change and it became to become strained. Like how many people took a social media break? How many people deleted Facebook because they just couldn't look at the internet anymore because it was full of bad news. And so something like a quippy tweet from like Wendy's, who once reigned supreme with like having people roast them and going after McDonald's and kind of like dunking on their competitors, all of a sudden that doesn't hit the way it used to because everyone IRL is being terrible to each other. So like when you see it reflected back to you by a brand that doing it to sell a product, it's not as effective. And so this meanness and kind of not meanness, but snark really. Snark was kind of like the identity of all of these brands on the internet. And it kind of became ground cover. Like if you wanted to play and win on Twitter, you needed to be snarky.
you needed to make jokes, you needed to find moments to kind of like clap back. And that was kind of how you won on Twitter for a long time. I think we see it even as recently as the chicken sandwich wars between Popeyes and Chick-fil-A. And that was what, 2019? But at the same time, like, consumers are becoming increasingly aware of kind of this like grip that, in a way, capitalism has, but really like what brands were trying to do. And it was no longer them being relatable, right? Like, this curse of relatability, I think, is something that also plagues not just the internet and social media, but I think it plagues celebrities too, with like, you're only as relatable as you can manufacture yourself to be. And then eventually that bubble bursts and there's a massive fall from grace. So we see something like the silence brand meme, which is like this crab with a laser or some kind of little thing with a bunch of legs, that people would start replying in comments of like, if a brand tried to do too much, if they kind of went to that cringe, snarky territory. We also see the rise of accounts like Brands Saying Bae, where they would just snark on brands posting things to try to seem relatable and to try to seem interesting. But really, it was cringy and embarrassing. And people became more and more aware of that. And it became less cool to be that way on social media. And I think that was especially true for a platform like Twitter, which was like, you know, usually a really easy one-to-one kind of consumer relation channel, because you can kind of engage and via DMs, and people use it a lot for customer service. And so suddenly you see this sea of sameness, right? Where all of these brands are kind of doing the same thing, and that thing is not working anymore. The same can be said for what was happening to influencers on Instagram. So in the early days of social media, these influencers who started out as bloggers or YouTubers were building these massive audiences on Instagram around, like, I think especially about fashion influencers. So they were doing hauls, they were doing all of the stuff they were gifted, they were doing tutorials, and they were building this kind of aspirational life. But in times of social unrest, like, skinny, rich influencer who lives in the most wealthy neighborhood in the city you live in, that's not aspirational anymore. It's unattainable when people are having this kind of like visceral reaction to what's happening in the world. Somebody who's just kind of like posting these shots and look how wonderful my life is and look at all these beautiful products that I have and look at my home decor and my matching capsule wardrobe. People began to be aware of these kind of like tactics that allowed all these influencers to build huge followings, but just weren't giving back to the community in any way. So things like loop giveaways, which Instagram and Facebook banned because they want to prioritize creators who are going in and like engaging with the community they built, just kind of like generating new followers and trying to beat the algorithm. They began to kind of penalize people for doing that. And what it did was it really showed this gap between people who claim to have built a community and an audience of people, right? A community and an audience are not the same thing. And so this kind of set it and forget it tactic that had kind of been governing social media for all these influencers, where they kind of post once a day and on Tuesdays they do hauls and on Wednesdays they do try-ons and on Thursdays they go out and about, like, that method isn't interesting to people anymore. But all of these brands and all of these influencers were stuck in a rut because now we're competing with these much more advanced algorithms, and they're these kind of ever-changing platform updates from these huge companies designed to make you spend more money on Facebook. So the only way they knew how to beat the algorithm was by doing what they had always done, which was no longer working. But then we got TikTok. And TikTok is the great equalizer. I think the kind of rise in popularity of short form vertical video was kind of the logical next step in the attention economy. I think full bleed video
especially things that are played on a loop and repeat, capture everything that drives how people pay attention and how people stop the scroll. And that's something companies were fighting to do on social media for so long. Like, how can we make people stop scrolling and engage with us? Because like engagement is king. And on TikTok, you had a platform that was built to do this in the most effective way possible that keeps you looped in indefinitely. Like I've lost hours of my life scrolling TikTok, and I could have sworn I was on the app for 45 minutes and like it's 4 or 5 hours later. So there's an addictiveness to the way they built the platform, but that's a whole other thing. So when TikTok kind of like entered the public consciousness coming out of Musical.ly, it was kind of billed as a teen dance app. But I think for those of us who work in marketing, especially those of us who specialize in social, it was always pretty clear that TikTok was going to be much more powerful than that, because it started out as like, this is the new Musical.ly or this is the new Vine. But it quickly surpassed both of those other apps in terms of capabilities, because it took the best features from Vine, Snapchat, Instagram, and YouTube and combined them into one place. But more importantly than any of the features, the most important thing that TikTok had that has really kind of changed the landscape of social media is the TikTok algorithm. Now, some people think that the algorithm is actually not an algorithm and it's a team of strategists and curators who are serving you things on your feed, but that's neither here nor there. The thing about the TikTok algorithm that was so interesting and so exciting was how it prioritizes content and serves it to different communities, because seemingly anyone on TikTok could go viral at any time, which made the platform super attractive to creators and brands looking to build an audience very quickly, the way they might have been able to if they joined Twitter or Instagram in the early days and kind of figured that out. So after like 4 or 5 years of kind of like this bland, monotonous sea of sameness, suddenly we see like new forms of content happening. And it was actually very similar to the way Tumblr used to build creative communities in its kind of golden era. But the difference between what Tumblr did and what TikTok does, I guess Tumblr still exists, but not in the way it used to, is that TikTok put a face and a personality behind these creators working in these very niche verticals, as opposed to like anonymous reblogs or fake usernames that didn't tie back to a real person. So I think it takes the aesthetic and vulnerability and personalization that made Instagram so popular, but it added the ability to target niche communities organically, which I think is the most important. Now I want to caveat about TikTok that we know that TikTok deprioritizes content from people of color, from queer people, from people who are poor and disabled, or their backgrounds of their videos are not nice looking. That was like released in internal documents. I think Verge had it, and a couple of other outlets picked it up as well. And so there was a real kind of like reckoning in the beginning of the pandemic that was not okay. And that was addressed by the TikTok creator team. And, you know, to some extent, that's probably still happening, but it's much better than it used to be. But what happened with the pandemic, when suddenly we're all at home and things felt really scary and really bad, was that TikTok broke open the types of content that users found interesting. Because the majority of content that was being produced, that was going viral, that was reaching millions of people, were from individual creators. They weren't from brands, because TikTok was such a new app that the kind of like pay-to-play model that had kind of plagued Facebook and Instagram just wasn't there yet. And as someone like me who has worked with TikTok partners and has thought about advertising on that platform, it's expensive. It's really expensive. So the way you can advertise
is often in like promoted spots. Like when you first open the app for 24 hours, making sure your video is the first video. But a lot of times those really look like ads. They don't look like the content you'd see in your feed. And I think TikTok, much like Reddit, can smell bullshit from a mile away. And so they're not interested in ad content because that's not what people go to TikTok for. TikTok is a discovery app for things that everyday people use. It's not a discovery app in the way that like Instagram is a way for people to discover brands and new products. Like the things I've discovered from TikTok are like how to clean the grout in my bathroom, or there's a guy who runs a bodega in Red Hook who makes these sandwiches, and there's, you know, not a neighborhood that unless you live there, it's relatively inaccessible by train. Like most people wouldn't be going to that place. And it's putting a light on just like everyday people doing normal things who just found a way to make that interesting and sellable. And so there's a whole new landscape on TikTok that has not been available to consumers before. And so at the very top of this, I started to talk about how TikTok saved brand voice. And so what I mean by that is what TikTok did was it created a platform that was not made for brands. So in return, brands have to work harder. And people like me, the social media managers, have to work harder to engage with the communities they want to reach. And TikTok's a really hard platform for brands because so much of the trending content on that platform relies on songs that are not available to brands because of copyright rules. So unless it's part of the TikTok brand library, or it was a sound that was uploaded by a user that wasn't copyrighted, or it was something a brand purchased either from a third party site or is something that was in the public domain. So what you see is brands have to go to the communities they want to reach in order to find sounds that will allow their content to trend. So there was a really funny audio from last year. It started out as this person singing to their cat. It's called "Here Comes the Boy." And then somebody added like a piano behind it. And suddenly there was this lush orchestral arrangement and like all the brands were using that. Like I remember a really viral video that the San Diego Zoo did with one of their penguins. And so brands have to enter the communities they want to reach in order to find things that will allow them to trend. So it takes a lot more hands-on work and it kind of fills that gap between, you know, the audience and community that I was talking about before. And so what ends up happening is a lot of times, instead of making content, brands who are winning on TikTok are winning in the comments section of popular videos. And a lot of times those are popular videos kind of like outside of the brand's primary category. So like Duolingo, the language learning app, is really popular on TikTok because their social media manager, who has been profiled and like is starting to build a whole community of her own, right, is just like fully unhinged in the comments of people's videos. Like something that has absolutely nothing to do with like learning language, she's in writing funny comments. Actually, a lot of the NFL teams are really, really good about this. Jumping in, especially if there's like videos of little kids doing like funny athletic things. Ryanair has done a really good job kind of jumping in on TikTok, and not just in a customer service capacity, in like a truly proactive community management way, which has been really exciting. And this has allowed brands to be playful again and to do it without being cringy, because with the volume of videos that are uploaded to TikTok, there's countless opportunities to show up in these kind of like surprise and delight, unexpected ways in people's feeds. And this is like obviously a relatively new phenomenon because TikTok's only been like massive for two and a half years. So we'll need to see kind of how this engagement in the comments affects kind of like sales and acquisition, the way you look at kind of traditional acquisition and retention on other organic channels. But it's a much more effective marketing tool than any of the other social media platforms we've seen over the last couple of years. And I think the pandemic highlighted a need for levity on social media, and TikTok has been like a really, really welcome change of pace because it made the content that users find interesting viral. It wasn't just aesthetic videos. It wasn't aesthetic things like Instagram. It has filters, but it wasn't all funny filters like when Snapchat tried to revive itself. It wasn't all jokes like Vine. And even copycat apps like Reels and Triller won't be able to replicate what TikTok is doing because TikTok has created this really unique culture on the app. I think part of that has to do with the kind of language and the voice that is being used there. So you'll see like subject areas on TikTok referred to as talks. So are you on food talk? Are you on train talk? Are you on frog talk? Like, do you routinely get served videos that fall in this niche category on the For You page or the FYP? And so creators who can master these verticals can explode in popularity. And with those new communities, they've created a new way of kind of like speaking and interacting. And this development of this brand voice, which I think a lot of times is like wrongly attributed to Gen Z, because I think it's not just Gen Z. I think it's very specific to the culture of TikTok. And to the note of Gen Z, so I work in beverage alcohol. And one of the things about beverage alcohol is you can't advertise on social media unless, I think it's 71.4% of all users are above legal drinking age. And like TikTok is just flirting with finally crossing that line so that alcohol brands can advertise there. But so most TikTok users are adults. I think the pandemic changed the demographics pretty radically. And so it's building this platform native lingo that brands can then use to express their kind of own brand character and identity, but still with this kind of common denominator lingo that's native to that app, really, and that app only. So TikTok has very strict community guidelines. And the AIs that flag videos for community guidelines violations are swift. They take videos down so fast. And so what ends up happening is people create this language to kind of skirt around community guidelines that then becomes just kind of like the default language for the users. So for example, TikTok is really committed to making sure, especially given the association with like teens, that there's no depictions of like anything graphic, no death, no anything like that. So any TikTok where people would say the word death or die or kill, even in like a hyperbolic funny way, like, oh, I killed it on that. Or like, you know, this, like whatever, any use of those words. So what ends up happening is now people are using unalive to mean kill or die. And that's pretty dark, but now people say unalive to replace those words IRL, and it started on TikTok. And I think what's interesting is like ways to skirt the algorithm mimic traditional linguistic patterns, like because you can caption, natively caption on TikTok, which is like a big accessibility feature that a lot of users really called for. In order to get around cursing and having to have your curses be captioned out, similar to what's done with like Cockney rhyming slang, people are using rhyming words in the captions to kind of skirt around curse words. So it's breeding this whole new world of creativity. And TikTok is a platform that rewards that creativity, where I think a lot of other platforms, they reward style, not necessarily creativity. And it's interesting when you look at the social tone of other platforms and how a lot of times like internet speak is
pulled directly from like Black vernacular English. And so there's this type of like digital blackface, which definitely happens on TikTok, but a lot of the TikTok native vocabulary actually derives from how people use the platform as opposed to pulling from BVE, which I think is really interesting. So a lot of what this like Gen Z speak is are things that are derived from how people use and interact with TikTok. So it's created this whole new world for people to pull inspiration and creativity from, but also to allow them to be creative in their own right. And I think as the platform gets more mature and as the algorithm gets more mature, obviously you'll see brands come in as they find ways to like monetize and build out their brand advertiser tools, of course. But I also think at the end of the day, like that's not the culture of the app. And I think they're pretty hell-bent on making sure that it doesn't become the future of the app while still being profitable, which is a trap that pretty much all of the other social networks fell into.
Katie, we are going to have to leave it there. That was a unique episode of the Shiny New Object podcast, because I didn't ask you a single question when it came to your shiny new objects. And that was literally a fascinating monologue. And I am so unbelievably impressed by your knowledge. I learned so much. I saw a few some of that stuff, definitely didn't know a load of that stuff. I feel I've been schooled and educated and inspired. And all I can think to say is thank you so much. What an incredible brain and what an incredible communicator you are. I absolutely love that. I'm going to pay very close attention to your work because I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I feel really bad having to call time on it, but I have to go on and record something else. I will put this episode out with great pride, because that was fantastic. Such an education. But if someone wanted to reach out and get in touch with you, how would you like them to do that?
Yeah. So I'm always online on social media. So my handle is it's at Katie_PW and then 2 underscores. And that's Twitter and Instagram. So find me there. I'm post a lot of pictures of my dog, and I make a lot of terrible jokes on Twitter. So you can follow me there, and if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. I realize no one really gives me the opportunity to talk about social media ad nauseum, and there's always more where that came from.
Fantastic. Katie, thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thanks, Tom.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.